Bezos straight up freaks me out these days. Have you seen pictures of Jeff Bezos? He looks like a SWAT officer. He's all buffed out.
He looks like a fucking supervillain.
Yeah, he used to be like this dorky looking guy, but now he's all like ripped, and he's wearing like black jackets and sunglasses. He looks like he'd come in and steal your girlfriend and punch you in the face. So I think this is like a YouTube group, Improv Everywhere, and they took one of these New York subway station inlets.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over, and I think they're all over, at least. I'm not, what would I know? I've never been on the subway. They're all over Manhattan, I suppose. And you see these, and they put up a logo, a big Apple logo on there, and they got some people out in like a blue shirt with Apple logos on it to make it look like Apple employees were starting a line. And when people started asking questions, they'd say, oh, yeah, well, there's an Apple store down below. We're just going to let everybody in, and they'll be able to go get their iPhone. And so they ended up getting 50 people waiting in line. And then the improv people started saying things like, we can only take two at a time, just so everybody knows we have limited quantity. So they kind of like egged them on for a while. You know, so you had a fake logo on the building, and then you had people in shirts, and they were saying they only had limited supply. I think it made for a good YouTube video. But I didn't see you in there.
I would think that people would get murdered.
You're like a behind the scenes guy. I would think these people get sued by Apple because they're using their logo. They're pretending to be a store. They're taking away potential customers.
Yeah, but it's for satire.
This is why you're the behind the scenes guy,
which is fair use.
I knew you were involved with this. You're like the mad puppeteer for this. You're like coordinating things from afar.
I'm honestly surprised there was like not a negative story about this where there were like people that punched people.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like maybe people would be good natured about it to a degree. Because, you know, hey, if you fell for it, you're the dummy that keyed 50 out.
50 people waiting in line, probably for hours, to get a $800 device that they find out that they're not getting. I don't know.
Man, they also had fake reporters out there who were in on the gag to make it look real. They went all in on this. And they had empty iPhone 10 boxes. They put a lot of effort into that. But, you know, now is the period of time where...
My question is, where the hell did they get empty iPhone 10 boxes?
Probably made up. They probably just printed them out. Right?
Oh, fair.
Because you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. But, you know, what we are seeing now is, like, all the cracked iPhones hit Twitter now that people have had their 10s for a while. And because, you know, the whole damn thing's wrapped in glass. The front and the back are the same kind of glass.
Should have gotten the 8.
And it is. Well, the 8's glass, too. See, this is what I'm going to get into. So this is what I wanted to bring up is, why are all these phones, like your Samsungs and your Apples, why are they going back to glass? Didn't we learn our lesson with the iPhone 4? And I say, my theory is it's because ceramic isn't ready yet. I think there's going to be a point in time where a lot of these phones switch over to ceramic once they get the cost down. Because the issue with metal is it's not radio transparent.
You would think ceramic would be ready, though, considering how long we've been using it for, like, dishes and things.
Yeah, it's a special kind of tough ceramic. So Apple made an Apple Watch out of ceramic, as I think they're, like, dipping their toe into it. But you don't see any phones like this shipping made out of ceramic. So in the meantime, they have to get something that's radio transparent, and everybody wants wireless charging, so they have to have something that allows wireless charging. So that's how you end up with either crappy, removable plastic backs, which some people prefer, or you end up with glass backs. And that's why in 2018 and the end of 2017, we're getting another rash of glass phones again.
Hmm.
And the headphone port is officially like just gone from all these devices. Pixel 2 doesn't have it. The iPhones don't have it. The OnePlus is like the last holdout. Let's see if you can guess which company this is. Either you or the audience. Let's see who wins first. They'll have to tell us in the comments. So this is, you guess the company, okay?
Mm-hmm.
A well-capitalized Seattle startup seeks Unix developers.
Microsoft.
Nope. Here, I'll read you a little bit of the description for you. A well-capitalized startup seeks extremely talented C and C++ Unix developers to help pioneer commerce on the internet. You must have experience designing and building large and complex yet maintainable systems, and you should be able to do so in about one-third the time than the most competent people think is possible. You should have a BS, an MS, a PhD in computer science, or the equivalent. Top-notch communication skills are essential, and familiarity with the web server... With web servers and HTML would be helpful, but it's not necessary.
Now, when you say startup, are you trying to throw me off?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a startup at some point.
Is it Amazon?
Yeah. Yeah, this is Jeff Bezos writing on a mailing list.
Oh, you mean the Jeff Bezos that just divested a billion dollars in
one.
Stocks?
Mm-hmm. But this is him. This is him. By the way, he adds to the end, your compensation would include meaningful equity ownership. That's kind of funny. Yeah, this is Bezos on 8/21/1994, looking to get developers for his well-capitalized Seattle startup.
1994, jeez.
See, that's one of the funny things about Amazon is profit hasn't been their main goal. Building trust from their customers is by low prices. And what that is it's a group of different investment bankers that came together and formed Amazon. And they started at the beginning with the intention of doing commerce online. They started as a bookstore so that way they could nail a bookstore. But do you remember when Amazon was just a bookstore?
No.
You don't?
No.
You're making me feel old.
I didn't know about Amazon until after it was like a...
Oh, yeah. It started as just a bookstore.
General thing.
That's why it was such a big thing that Amazon was putting Barnes & Noble and all these companies out of business, and then they started the Kindle, is they originated as just a bookseller.
You would think that their Kindle section would suck less then.
Well, the market has reacted as they've become a heavyweight and punished them by exclusives and lack of exclusives.
Well, I meant more the interface.
Oh, well, there's that. I kind of like the Kindles, though. I think it's an interesting branch of technology because you got the e-ink display, which I think should get more uses.
Well, I meant like the web browsing side, not the Kindle itself.
Oh, yeah, it is atrocious. Yeah.
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 The Kindles are pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, their UIs are a little bad, but it's pretty nice having something to last a week. I've been I've been hearing more and more people say that they use a lot of those read it later services like Instapaper and your whatnots and your pockets. You hit a
blast
button,
that to the
and
Kindle.
It blasts it to the Kindle. And then you go read that long article on a Kindle with a screen that doesn't burn your retinas.
Nice.
It does seem like kind of a good deal. Yeah. It's funny picturing Amazon as a startup, huh? We watch some crazy things go down here in Seattle.
I mean, technically, isn't it still a startup?
I don't know anymore. I mean, their services division is probably making a pretty good profit these days.
But they're still privately funded, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So technically, it's still a startup.
It's not it's not all the goods and services that you and I use. It's the business end of services, like the EC2 and S3 that's making the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh. We are watching the ascendancy of a major player.
When did Amazon actually go online, though? Because that was 1994. I don't think they went online in 1994.
You know, I would have to probably look at the Wikipedia page to answer. I read a fascinating book about the origins of Amazon, so I should know that, but those are little details that sort of got lost.
It's interesting how there's books about like the creations of these companies, because I read, was it, In the Plex, about Google?
About Google, yeah. Yeah. Which actually freaked me out a little bit when I read that book. I really, you know, the thing that really, and I've said
this
before.
It's funny, that book made me like Google more.
Oh, really? See, the one element that really scared me about that book and about Google is and I've said this before in the air, is that there were several really creepy things that Google was considering at different points. Like Eric Schmidt was all on board and all of his underlings were all on board and everybody was all on board on this creepy thing.
Oh, yeah. As Larry and Sergey are out, I'm flipping my switch on Google.
Yeah, and it was like Larry or Sergey. I can't remember who. And it was probably different ones in different circumstances that were like, no, guys, we can't do that. That is too creepy. We got to draw the line here. And if it wasn't them as the last line of defense against creepiness, the company would have done things that people today would still be shocked by.
Yep.
And that is a scary thing because that one man or woman cannot hold that line forever. And then at some point, the original leadership will be gone and the apparatus will have been built. And the need for profit will still be there. And it's never ending. It's never subsiding. It's always increasing for these companies.
I mean, maybe, but there's also the possibility it could go, you know, the same direction or the opposite direction. I mean, look at Microsoft. It's gotten better over the years.
Well, we say that. We say that. But has the horrible corporate culture inside gotten better? Has the fact that they're also trying to become an advertising company really made...
I don't care about the people they gobble up as long as they're treating me fine.
My point, though, is like, I guess where I'm going with this is... We have ourselves the potential of a real monster on our hands because it's the same problem with the NSA spying apparatus. You might be okay with it when your guy's in office, but when another guy comes in office, are you as comfortable with the fact that we have domestic surveillance?
Yeah.
It's the same with Google. I am not as comfortable, and it was Into the Plex that broke that for me. And that's sort of why I've been de-Googlifying for a while now. And it is hard. It is a sticky platform.
No, see, I'm going to stick with Google right up until the management switches out, and then I'm going to just hard cut.
Really?
Yep.
What would you replace Gmail with?
I don't know.
Fastmail, if I was going to sort of go indie, not indie, quote unquote, like that, because that'd be self-hosted. Yeah. But like, if I wasn't going to switch to another predominant hosted platform, I trust the folks at Fastmail.
I'll switch to Hotmail, Chris.
Collabra, maybe. Hotmail. Outlook.com. AOL.com. So that's the thing, is, and Docs. You know, you'd probably end up wanting to roll your own solutions on like VPSs or something in the meantime.
Yeah.
And that's
a
lot of work, dude.
I wouldn't want to do that.
In the meantime, you're still on Skype or maybe you're Slack or Discord. Like, it's like, it just doesn't end.
Yeah, I've already given up my privacy, so.
Well, according to the Wikipedia, all they have on here is founded 1994, July 5th, 1994 for Amazon, which was 23 years ago. Wow. I remember that. That's really weird. That's a weird thing to remember.
I don't even remember Amazon before the 2000s.
And now they're like this company that owns Comixology and Twitch and Whole Foods. And remember when they bought Zappos?
They
Do you remember when they bought Zappos? So you've been following maybe since the Zappos purchase?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
I feel like you probably caught on to them earlier because they're in the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, I had friends working there. I had coworkers who were working with me who had come from Amazon too, so they were on my radar early on. They are interesting. They are an interesting company, and they have this weird, big, old hospital building in downtown Seattle that you can see when you're coming into Seattle. And you look up at it, you think it's like a church or a hospital, but it's one of Amazon's many buildings. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Go there for a platform built by Linux enthusiasts, educators, and developers. Linux Academy is a full-featured training library with everything you need to learn new skills and advance your career in Linux, cloud topics, and really anything DevOps. They have hands-on scenario-based labs to give you experience on their real servers. They'll spin up in real time. The courseware and the servers match each other. You pick the distribution, everything syncs up. They have course schedulers to stick with your busy day and busy week. They have practice exams and quizzes if you're getting ready for certs. Oh, and speaking of certs, if you're doing the certification thing, they've got training built specifically by their instructors to get you ready for the exams. They have flashcards that are forked by the community. They have cloud servers that are giving you hands-on real-world experience, so you walk away with the confidence of this stuff and a community stacked full of Jupiter Broadcasting members. You get started at linuxacademy.com/unplugged. Man, I would have killed for a resource. I would have gone out on the street and gotten fist fights with hobos to have a resource like this back in the day. And now I sit here up in my podcast mansion. It's big and it's imaginary. And I train my mind at linuxacademy.com/unplugged. Take the Unplug Challenge and go complete a course and then send us your public profile. And you just, well, you'll probably get some, I probably shouldn't say you will guarantee get some swag, but you just might get some swag.
You know, and even if you know a whole lot of Linux stuff, I'm pretty sure there's still something on there that you can learn from.
Boy, isn't that true? Because they're adding new stuff all the time. They're refining the old stuff. And that's a big part of the Linux Academy, is they stay competitive so you can stay competitive. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged.
All right, Chris, it's that time of the show. I'm going to do some Ask Errors. I saw that there was a few in the Discord.
Yeah, Dan sent us a whole batch. Let's do these. So he says, hashtag Ask Error. If Jupiter Broadcasting had a journalist that was easily deployable, tech savvy, and independent, where would you send them first?
Africa.
What?
There's no news coverage of Africa, but there's a whole lot of crap going on there, mostly with our country.
I got an answer, because I was thinking about this morning. There are two big stories behind the scenes in Linux that if I knew with absolute certainty that if I spent, I think 20 hours on.
You're taking the Linux angle. I was taking like the world politics angle.
Well, because I think these are big stories and I think they need to be talked about. But the problem is Linux journalism has devolved into clickbait sort of, like appeal to your lower instincts kind of journalism, the easy stuff where you can just sort of crap it out. And there are two stories behind the scenes right now that need way more exploring.
It very much parallels gaming journalism, actually.
It does, yeah. It really does. And so the first one is this week, the Software Freedom Law Center just issued a trademark infringement-like appeal against the Software Freedom Conservancy.
Oh.
behind the, yeah, which is interesting because the Law Center set up the helped set up the Conservancy in 2016.
Huh.
So they, if they had an issue with the trademark, it probably would have come up when they were helping establish the Conservancy. What's really going on behind the scenes is either a massive conspiracy that is fueled by VMware and the Linux Foundation to punish the Conservancy, or personal feuds behind Eben Molgen and the person running the Software Conservancy, or something else completely unrelated. But there is a there's a big thing happening here that could fracture enforcement and the Linux community at its fundamental layers in a lot of different ways. And all we have are these legal press releases that just kind of vaguely state what's going on. And there's so much more going on behind the scenes that I think average Linux users would be very surprised by. That's number one. Number two, currently going on in Linux that people are not talking about is what caused that kernel enforcement statement I just mentioned about. We've covered this in other Jupiter Broadcasting shows, Linux Action News and Linux Unplugged, but there's this new enforcement statement. And it essentially says the kernel developers that have all signed on to this view the license as this, and we will enforce it as this. And at the end of the day, what it essentially says is we will work with you to reach compliancy, but you must comply with the terms of the license. And eventually, after working with you, if you don't get there, we may sue you. But our first effort will be to try to work with you.
And that's, this is how we interpret it.
This is how we interpret it, and we are the majority of the copyright holders.
Yeah, this is what we want you to try to comply with.
That was created because a GPL troll, one of the NetFilter developers, was attempting to monetize the GPL by going after companies that were using GPL code, but were not specifically adhering to the common access clause of the GPL, and saying that if you weren't providing the right download speed or if you weren't distributing the right language, like written language of the GPL, then you were in violation of common access. So if I go to your web server and I can't download it at the same speed that I can download it from the source's mirror, then that violates common access and I sue you.
Just imagine what happens when net neutrality goes out the window.
Right. And then I sue you for damages for not writing this wrong for every day that you had that published and then never fixed it. So not only do I sue you for violating GPL, but then I sue you for damages. And this is what the kernel developers, as I'm roughly explaining this, and again, I'm not a lawyer, so probably getting some of this wrong, they say this is monetizing the GPL. And so this kernel enforcement statement was an attempt to stop this type of monetization.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you start a GPL-based license project and you see that that's in there and you read that and still proceed, then you acknowledged their interpretation before you ever started your project.
Now, do you know if that only applies to the GPL V2 or if it applies
to the kernel? Because they applied – it's an enforcement statement for the kernel.
Well, no. I meant the common access clause.
Anything that's GPL2.
So not GPL3 though?
Correct. That was one of the things they changed in the 3. And in fact, the language that's in the kernel enforcement statement was essentially taken from the GPL3.
So they actually did something good in GPL3.
Yeah. And they adopted that sort of selectively for the kernel enforcement. Now, this guy going around monetizing this that caused this entire thing that caused 200 kernel developers to agree and then the kernel developers to then work with the Software Conservancy to all come together on this enforcement statement.
He's still out there trolling, right?
Yeah. That's a massive story that nobody's talking about because there's no journalist that can work for 20 to 40 hours on a story and then publish it and get any kind of return on investment.
Yeah, and if net neutrality does get rescinded, that actually will become a much more successful business too.
Sure.
Because pretty much everybody will be in noncompliance, and their options will be either pay this guy or pay ISPs to get better access.
Yep, Fastlane. Yeah. So if I had a journalist today at my disposal that I tasked, this would be one of the two things I would task them with immediately, is look into this and get me the real story. Go get quotes, go get interviews, find out what's going on, and let's report on it.
Now, what about things outside the Linux bubble?
But still tech?
Could be other things too.
I have less interest there because it's pretty well covered, you know? I don't know.
I feel like There's plenty of stuff that is not well covered.
Oh, yeah. 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 Get an example, though? Because, like, I that's the stuff, like, that I actively am watching that I can't not see, for
politics and stuff. You know, you got good coverage of the the U.S. You got good coverage of Europe. You got decent-ish coverage of the Middle East.
Back to Africa, for example. Yeah.
There's no coverage of Africa. There's no coverage of South America. Mm. There's a little coverage of Australia.
And the coverage of Russia is super skewed.
And there's not... Actually, you know what would be good is more tech coverage of, like, legal things in Asia. Because that shit ends up affecting us down the road. And you don't see any of that anywhere, really.
Hashtag Ask Air. Dan asks, are we headed for Ghost in the Shell or Battlestar Galactica? And I would throw in a TNG, possibly, Star Trek in there.
So, prevalent observation or...
Yes.
Multiplanetary societies that get killed by robots?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's essentially the question. I say Ghost in the Shell.
I say both.
I think we are heading towards two cataclysmic events that will cause humanity to stay on Earth for the rest of our existence. We may fart around in our own solar system, but we're not traveling the galaxy setting up new colonies. Not any time in the next thousand years.
The whole Battlestar Galactica thing, that was them being in their own solar system too. It was just multi-planet.
Yeah, but then they go on the run.
Because they're forced to, because the robots will kill them.
I could see a colony on Mars. I could see a colony on the moon and a colony on Mars. But I think two things are colliding together long term, like 25 years, 30 years down the road, maybe another generation or two. But psychedelics, I think the internet and all of the ways people share information.
We're going to get high and forget about space.
Yeah, well, we're just going to get too distracted by exploring inner space, basically. Mm. We're going to be like, holy crap, the real frontier is right here in the mind, and I can do that here on Earth.
I mean, you can make arguments that some of the biggest scientific advances were by people that were high as hell.
Oh, yeah. No, psychedelics are a real thing. And I think that things like shrooms and DMT, the knowledge about those is going to spread more as people just have common access to knowledge on the internet.
So, I can see what you're saying, but I can also see a world in where exactly that might make it happen faster.
Oh, like breakthroughs? Oh, yeah. That's an interesting argument. See, I was thinking people would be so busy essentially circle-jerking over their acid trips that they wouldn't bother going into space. But you're saying they may have the very breakthroughs that allows them to travel.
Yeah, because it lets them expand their minds.
Jeez, you're a positive son of a bitch. All right, and then the number two thing that's coming at the same time, so you get the psychedelics, which creates the most incredible experiences, and then you got virtual reality, which is essentially the holodeck for the mind where you can create any other experience.
I wonder if people are going to get into they overload their brains and go into comas just because they're combining psychedelics and VR.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And we're just going to be, in our houses, doped up on drugs.
So you're saying we're never going to leave
eating top ramen, tripping out on VR.
So what you're saying is this is going to be Idiocracy?
I guess so. That's what we end up with. It does feel a little dystopian. But, you know, how else are you going to avoid the harsh reality?
Listen, I'm down for it if we can get President Comanche.
Totally. All right. Hashtag Ask Air. Last one from Dan this week. If you had 15 minutes with the most influential radio producer in our time, what would you ask them? What would you ask the most influential radio producer of our time? That seems like a particularly poignant question, doesn't it? Like, he's got a very specific angle on that question.
I guess.
That's very specific. Because I think of TV people. Like, I think, what if I had 5 minutes with Wolf Blitzer? What would I ask him? I've never really thought about a radio producer before. What I would ask them is I would look for insights into what I do.
First, who would be the radio producer?
Nothing comes to mind. But if I was presented with one, I think I would search for insights into podcasting. I would try to grok knowledge to improve my craft. Or at least get insights into their craft and not make the same mistakes.
Yeah, I guess he's trying to create an equivalence between podcast and radio production.
Perhaps, yeah. I feel like they're different animals, but I mean, they're definitely different animals. But I would still try to learn from their mistakes.
I'd ask him if I could have a free microphone. Because it's really hard to find a good microphone for less than 25 grand.
Microphone?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there are some really nice microphones out there. That's true.
I feel like we have good microphones, but they could be a lot better.
They could be great microphones. Let's talk food for a moment. I noticed that you got a whole batch of noodles. Like your top ramens and the fancier ones too, and you got a whole batch of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try the cheese and the noodles thing?
I did. It was
It was eh? Yeah. So for those of you that aren't familiar, there's a thing going around where you can spice up your cup of noodles or something like that by adding a few ingredients.
I think it would be better if it were like the classic style top ramen and not the cup noodles.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yes, it is better with classic top ramen. So
because with the
American
cup noodles,
cheese or cheddar?
American.
Okay.
Because I don't think it
wouldn't work
out
right.
Well.
Nope, that's right.
I think the reason it doesn't work with the cup noodles is because by the definition of how they work, you have to have a lot of broth, and I think that doesn't work well with the cheese. You need to have like a low broth kind of soup.
You know what's okay? So my favorite is you get the ramen, you get the noodles going, and you heat them up, and then before you finish it, so like you first you get the water and the noodles cooked, and then when you got a little bit of time left, then you add the slice of American cheese. If you've got green onion, chop that up. You add that, and for me, I like to add like a little, like either hot sauce or
some
soy sauce or sriracha, yeah. Sriracha. And then finish it cooking for a little bit longer, and then let it sit for a bit. And then something that other people will do is they'll add a hard-boiled egg to that business too.
See, I'm actually one of the people that's kind of weird. I traditionally actually prefer my ramen without any broth.
What?
Yeah.
No liquid at all? Do you put the bouillon stuff in there?
Yeah, after you drain it.
How do you mix? Okay, so you mix the bouillon in, you get it all mixed in, and then you drain out the broth.
No. You drain out the water, and then you mix the bouillon in.
And just stir it really good, because it seems like it'd be just powdery dry.
Well, the
it gets kind of slimier, though. It gets thicker, doesn't it?
The noodles are still wet.
Right.
So it, like, coats and...
Makes a thicker sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that once or twice. That is good, but I like the broth,
It just ends up
too.
Being, like, flavored noodles with a more... A less watered-down flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know... Sometimes you can add some butter.
Oh.
That makes it really good.
What I like to do, as you know, is I like to do, like, a side of pot stickers with it. Which is extra work, but what I do is I warm them up in the microwave for like 2-3 minutes because they're frozen, but they're pre-cooked, and I get them like all loose and goosey in the microwave, and then I get a little garlic oil simmer in or butter or something simmer in a pan, and I throw the pot stickers in that pan for a few seconds to fry them up on each side, and then I have that with the ramen with the cheese and the egg in there, killer.
So
I don't do the egg, but I'm going to my next time I try this.
I was thinking that, you know, if you do the whole dry noodle thing, once you get it mixed together, you put the cheese on top, let it get all melty, then you mix it up again, and you got cheese, cheesy, spicy noodles.
It's like a sauce you've made,
dude. Put some sriracha over the top.
You haven't done this yet, or you're going?
Not yet.
Oh, this does sound good. I want to know the audience's ramen recipes. If you're listening to this on YouTube, leave a comment or go over to jupiterbroadcasting.com/contact, send us an email, or even better, do it in the Discord with hashtag AskAir or on Twitter, because those are ones we catch right before the show, so they're definitely going to get seen. What is your ramen recipe? And if we get a good one, I'm going to read it on the air, because this is important.
And just to be clear, we know that Top Ramen... Isn't
super healthy. We're not saying we do this all the time.
Not only that, but we know it's not real ramen either.
No, this is just for fun.
This for fun and for poor people.
Yeah, and just, you know, like to spice when you got to eat some poor food, how can you make it a little more interesting?
It turns out I am a poor people and I'm going to become a more poor person soon.
So help us. Last one for the day. Hashtag ask error. What occupation, other than the one you have now, would you be good at and also have fun doing?
I don't think I'd be good at it, but I would enjoy being a chef.
Totally. I've thought about
like
a barbecue restaurant or something.
Just coming up with new...
Says the ramen guy.
Listen... There are some high quality chefs that do some good stuff with really cheap food.
Yeah. I have fantasized often about creating a barbecue restaurant.
And then they charge $500 for it.
Go there and create some sort of like system where like the meat's only available while the meat's available. That'd be my like the meat's only good while it's I don't know. I'd have to work on it. But you know what would be for me, I think? I think I would be exceptionally good at sales. Of any kind, but it'd have to be a product I like, and I would love for it to be like car sales.
So you want to work for Amazon?
No, I kind of want to sell like really nice cars, like cars that I think are awesome, like a Tesla car
salesman.
I see
you more as like a used car salesman.
Damn, dude, that hurts.
but you'd be really good at it, and you got to admit.
No, I don't think cars is it. I'm kidding. But it would have to be a product that I'm really, really like jacked up about. Like if that's my Achilles heel is I cannot... wax on poetically about something that I don't like. But if I like it, I try to convert everyone around me to it.
Listen, Chris, I just want to see you in a cheap suit with your hair slicked back trying to sell things to people.
It's got low mileage. It's got low mileage. Check it out. Last.ting.com. It's a smarter way to do mobile. It's mobile that would be the way the entire industry is today if everybody had to hit the reset button and start all over again. It's pay for what you use mobile. $6 for a line. You want two lines? It's $6 for each of them. You want three lines? It's $6 for each of them. You want 255 lines? While I'm not sure if that's actually possible, it would technically be $6 for each of them. Last.ting.com. You go there, you get $25 off a device or $25 in service credit. Now, your average Ting bill is just about $23 per phone per month. So a $25 service credit will actually get you through the first month. It's nationwide coverage, no contracts, a fantastic control panel that gives you your usage at a glance. You can take complete control, set alerts, name devices. Oh, and speaking of devices, they support CDMA and GSM cellular networks, which means you probably have a device that already works with Ting, and it's easy to get one either directly from Ting or pick up a used device and buy a Ting SIM. They have great customer support. I love this tweet I got, Rikai. People, you know, people like to share their success stories with Chris.
Yeah.
That's me. We like to tell Chris how it's going. And I got one from Super Mudkip. He says, "Hey, at Chris Lass, keep doing those Ting FTW ads. I've migrated my sister, my mom, and my grandma to Ting. Keep it up."
I converted somebody this weekend.
You did?
Using our promo code.
Good for you.
So there was somebody, one of my friends, they left Verizon because it was way too goddamn expensive. And they were going to go to Boost Mobile. I didn't say a word to them. I just left a link to the rate calculator,
and then that does it for you.
2 days later, they were like, "Thank you for that link. This is fucking amazing."
Yeah, that's a good resource for anyone that wants to go. Just start by going to last.ting.com, and even if you're not ready to switch to Ting today, go there to support the show and browse around and learn more about Ting. Like, check out their blog; they have a great write up on how fiber optics work, getting down to the basics with fiber optics, which is just a fascinating read. Last.ting.com.
Chris, you were doing some weird-ass fucking biohacking to your body.
I am. I'm reporting back. I'm doing it so the audience doesn't have to.
I'm pretty sure you're slowly turning yourself into the Terminator.
One component at a time. So I reported last week that my sleep had sucked balls since I went to New York. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, waking up every 38 minutes, usually, is what it was, and was just taking its toll. Weeks upon weeks of not getting good sleep can screw with your brain, it screws with your mood, it can screw with your motivation. It was getting dark for me. I'll be honest, like, when I go weeks into not getting good sleep, I start thinking, like, I don't know, like, my perspective on things changes. Like, when we have a challenge come up in JB, instead of my response being, "We can take that on and solve it," it's like, "Let's just kill that show and end it. Let's just end all of this. I don't want to deal with this."
Yeah, I've heard that line several times.
Yeah.
So your solution here is to ingest powdered metals?
Yeah, well, I took three things, really, to try to get my sleep back on track. I started taking this magnesium supplement, which is a powder that you add to your water. And the product is called Natural Calm. And magnesium helps just sort of relax you. It's just really easy to mix with water. Kind of gives it like a raspberry lemon tea flavor. So it's not even that bad to consume. I kind of just like drinking it. And I combined that with a couple of other things. So I'd done magnesium before and noticed some...
Your crazy mad scientist cocktail.
So if you're having trouble sleeping, I'm going to tell you the regime that I've begun. And I'm not saying you should do it. I'm just telling you what I have done. And I did it in conjunction with Hadia. So we both were kind of A-B experimenting on each other. And 2 days ago, I stopped taking all of the stuff cold turkey so that I could go a couple of days before the show without any of the stuff in my system. And just do a comparison.
Cold turkey. Did you have any tryptophan?
So I did. So I took the magnesium in the evenings with dinner. And then I took in the morning and in the evening, I took tryptophan. I took 500 milligrams of tryptophan, sometimes 1,000 milligrams in the evening of tryptophan.
That seems like a lot, but okay.
Yeah, but you know, I'm a 215-pound person, so it's not a ton, you know, and the whole thing about it is it's tryptophan, as you guys probably know from turkey, although that's sort of overblown by quite a bit, is it promotes restful sleep.
Yeah, I think you'd have to eat like 12 turkeys to get the amount of tryptophan.
Yeah, and cooking it can also ruin the tryptophan, so there's that.
I think it's overblown, but it's also not overblown because we don't get much tryptophan in our diet regularly, so a small amount probably does a lot.
Yeah, because you don't have like a tolerance or whatever. And then I took something that I wasn't so sure about called Instatol, and I took 1,000 milligrams in the morning and 1,000 milligrams in the evening. I also avoided all alcohol this week, and I attempted to do at least a nightly walk, but it mostly worked out to be about every other night I did a walk, so it wasn't quite as often as I wanted just because work was busy. And both Hadi and I slept better than we have in months. And I'm talking like go to bed.
So did she also do this or did she sleep better because you slept better?
No, we both did this and then she continued and I stopped just to see that. So we both slept like when we went to bed, 5-10 minutes, I fell asleep within 5-10 minutes until it was time to wake up. And we slept to like 7:30 a couple of mornings, which is
That's really unusual for you.
It is, yeah.
You're usually up before the sun comes up.
Yeah, I've been getting up around 5 recently. And then I can't go back to sleep. And great restful sleep on top of that. And my mood has improved as a result of it. And then I stopped taking it as an experiment. And the two nights immediately that I stopped taking it, I was waking up constantly throughout the night. I woke up at 4 a.m. today. Mm-hmm. It's been hell.
Oh, so what you're saying, Chris, is you stopped taking it, and now you're ruining our shows.
Yeah, right? Well, except for it takes me a little while. Like, if I sleep good for a few days in a row, I get a good few days out of it before I really start going off the rails again. It takes me, like, 2-3 weeks of not sleeping well.
Oh, so you'll be crap by the time LOP comes around.
See, the background, yeah, exactly. The background around all of this is I have sleep apnea, and if I don't treat myself well during the day, it agitates my sleep apnea. Like, if some of the things I eat or depending on how I lay, my sleep apnea can get pretty bad. If I manage to get myself into a good rhythm, sleep rhythm, and I eat well during the day and I lay on my side, I tend to breathe, which is way better than not breathing. So I really appreciate that. So that was the other thing, is it sort of has this sort of knock-on effect of creating other things that line up for me that make my sleep better. So it's not just these things that are doing it, but they sort of promote the conditions I need for good sleep that have enabled like just these best night's sleep I've had. And so Hadia kept taking it. She kept having great sleep.
Nice.
So I'm back on it as of this morning because I'm going to take some in the evening before bed. And it's not bad. Like since the magnesium stuff's flavored, I kind of like drinking it anyways. And it's fun to sort of experiment with this stuff because it's all just natural supplements. It's not like I'm taking something super hardcore.
So it's instead of crystal light, it's crystal heavy metal.
Yeah, it's magnesium light is what it is. I've no other sleeping pills. I haven't taken any melatonin or anything else. I've just done this. And
I think for people that are just generally having sleep problems that aren't likely to get woken up during the night, that melatonin is still probably the best option, though.
Yeah, just do a little bit of it. Don't do more than like 2 milligrams or whatever. Just do a small amount of it and do it about 20, 30 minutes before you're ready to fall asleep. So that way you're in bed and you can catch the sleepiness when it hits you.
Yeah, if you're not getting woken up by like external factors, it's good. But if you are, you'll probably not get back to sleep after you get woken up.
Yeah. I'm going to put a link to the Calm stuff because it also just kind of works if you're having a hard day. It actually does sort of like I don't know. I'm not going to try to explain the science of it, but...
And for people that don't know, melatonin is the stuff that actually your body produces to make you want to sleep.
Sorry, I was talking about the magnesium stuff. I'll put a link to that. But the melatonin stuff is pretty great, too.
Yeah.
It's all good stuff. I feel like it's the key to getting back on track with fasting. I feel like it's the key to improving mood. Like, there's a lot of stuff that sleep is dependent on.
There's also the fact that stuff like intermittent fasting and some of the low-carb diets also affect your sleep schedule just because of how your body adjusts itself.
Word, girl. Word, girl. Up where we have Lady Jupes parked, it was snowing this morning. It was one of those wake up, look out the window, and snow's everywhere, so the kids run out and go play in it. And in the back of my mind, I know that I'm now racing against the clock to prepare the RV for rats. Like, I have to prevent, like, it takes preventative measures. So I've got sound makers, sonic blasters underneath the RV blasting out hostile noises. Then we've installed lights under the RV that shine on the ground to make it less hospitable to rats. Mm-hmm. And then we've put essential oil, peppermint, cotton balls in all of the bays to try to prevent rats from going in the bays.
Have you thought about lasers?
Yeah, I know, right? And poison and all these things. These are, it's a multi-layered approach because we're parked right next to a huge old barn and there are absolutely rats in that barn and mice.
Apparently, like, rats are just a thing no matter where you live in Washington, though.
It is, yeah.
Because, like, so I'm on the apartment hunt and we found a really good deal on an apartment. And it was like $300 less than the one that we think we're going to end up in. And it looked good on the site.
Uh-oh.
But then we went looking for reviews of the place elsewhere.
Rats.
And apparently it's rat infested and they let their garbage overflow, which I guess attracts more rats.
Of course it does.
And yeah.
Yeah, that is a problem. Yeah, so we've got multi-layered approaches, so I don't want to have to, like, poison them or anything like that, but I definitely don't want them coming in the RV. And now that it's snowing and it's freezing outside, it was 32 degrees Fahrenheit this morning, that is the moment they start coming in. They start looking for that. What they do is they see my power cord attached to the barn, and the power cord is warm. It emanates heat, and they can feel that, so they follow the warm power cord up into the bowels of the RV. And not this time. I'm going to try to put like a wire brush, like the stuff you'd use to scrape paint or something. And I'm going to try to fill the power hole with that so that way they can't get through that wire mesh. I'm at full war. I'm a preventative war. I'm going to fight them over there so I don't have to fight them here.
You're not really at full war, though. Because if you were
fight them over there so I don't have to fight them here.
You'd be poisoning the shit out of those bastards.
Well, I will be, potentially, if they get anywhere near the RV.
You'd be going rat Agent Orange.
Extreme vetting over here at the RV. Okay.
What you got to do, Chris, the solution seems simple to me. Just strip all of the shielding off of that cord so when they touch it, they get electrified.
Smell that? Another cooked rat.
Any rat that gets is good enough to climb up that cord and survive deserves to live in your RV.
It is tempting, though. My brother is in Arizona, and he's got a backyard that would fit the RV and a fence that's built to open up for RVs down in Arizona right now. And while we're sitting here getting snow, he's dealing with like 65, 70-degree weather, and his dogs are sunning out in the backyard. And I thought to myself, what if I just watch the passes, wait for them to clear, and then I just jumped in Lady Jupes and drove down to Arizona. It'd be so amazing. It's all fantasy, though, because I could never leave the kids. But I daydream about it.
I couldn't live in the heat, dry or otherwise.
No, not for long. But for like 2 months, 3 months, totally could do Arizona. No,
I feel like you could do it permanently. I feel like you would acclimate.
I don't know about like 90 to 100 degrees. When it gets over 100, I'm out, dude. I can't.
Yeah, but 90-degree dry heat is different than 90-degree...
That is true.
Washington does. Wet.
People say that, but then once you experience it, there really is a big difference.
Yeah.
It is way less sufferable.
That, and you can do like the cheap air conditioning, like because they got those swamp coolers.
Yeah.
Because it's very dry there, so
Take Jupes. Jupes has got two AC units built in, plus the one in the engine. So I technically have three AC units in Jupes.
Probably cheaper there, too.
Yeah, bastards. Those Arizonas. I just don't like the cold, and I feel like an old person. That's it. I just feel like an old person.
You know, maybe you should do it. You know, if you have any Bitcoin left. the price of Bitcoin has doubled in the past 2 months, Chris.
I know. Bitcoin is crazy right now,
man. It's over $7,000.
Yeah. I think that might be the new floor for a while. That's going to
really?
Be.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to not go up anymore?
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying if it goes up and it slides back, I think it's going to hit 7 and it won't go any further down than 7.
No, I want it to go back down to the 100. So
of course.
I'm going to go all in this time.
Yeah, really? If a big sale came along, that's what us Bitcoiners call it, is a Bitcoin sale.
Yep.
When the price crashes.
Hell, if it goes under $1,000, I'm buying Bitcoin.
It would be, you know what?
Because at this point, it seems almost proven that Bitcoin will again spike.
It is like a cycle at this point, isn't it? And what also means it's probably going to pop. You know, we're going to get to like 10,000 and it might pop.
Yeah.
But I think it might just slide to 7. So it's just still...
If there's a flash crash, Chris, text me.
Okay, will do. I'll watch it and let you know. The Life of Beard. Let's get an update on how things are going on the home front. I think it was like 4 episodes ago you dropped the bomb on looking to get a place, moving in with the ladies. How has the progress gone on finding a place to live?
Well, the schedule, due to my girlfriend not having work for much longer where she is, was moved up a whole lot. So I'm probably going to be moving either this month or the very beginning of next month.
Ooh, a winter move, my favorite.
Which is super pain in the ass because turns out there's not a lot of places available. And
especially in the Seattle area, dude.
It is currently also not a renter's market. It is very much a seller's market.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I can get a call back from the person I left a message for, there might be a decent place, but it's so far like the only one I've really found.
So decent, like define decent. Are we talking
let's see, less than 1,000 square feet.
Okay. Okay.
2-bedroom.
Okay. What's the price range?
I think it's $1,500, $1,400, somewhere in there.
How close to Seattle?
It's in Seattle, actually.
Oh, that is a good deal for a place that close to Seattle. So it's like in Seattle?
Yeah, it's like 7 miles from downtown.
Holy shit, dude. That's a good deal.
I think it's North Park or something.
Wow. I mean, I could see places going easily $2,200 down there a month.
It's south of Georgetown, if you know where that is, across the river.
Down in the South Park area.
Yeah. Oh, it is South Park.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow. That'd be really great. That'd be an unusual find. I got to be honest. That's an unusual find. That's going to go
fast. Pretty good. That's why I'm waiting for this call. If this call comes during the show, Chris, we're pausing the show.
All right, cool. Jeez.
It also has gigabit availability from both Comcast and CenturyLink.
Oh, my God. That would be so nice.
Yeah. For less than $100 a month, so less than what we're paying here for four times as much.
Don't even get me going on that. That really burns me.
Jeez. You're just going to have to sync all your files to me and have me upload everything to the gigabit.
So I guess you don't have a ton of stuff to move if it worked out. So it's a pretty doable move in that time frame.
For me, yes. Yeah. Less so for the girlfriend because she has more stuff and she's moving across the country.
Do you want to say how far she's moving or anything like that?
From Mississippi to Washington.
How much stuff are we talking?
Not a crazy amount, but there's a reason that we have $10,000 to work with and not less.
Because you're going to have to rent something to move all that stuff?
Yeah, possibly.
Oh, man. How are you going to do that? Road trip? Fly over there and drive back?
That's a possibility, but since we have more to work with than we initially expected, we're probably just going to ship it with something like UShip.
Yeah, yeah.
That's... Or just ship it via UPS if it comes down.
How are you setting your budget? How do you know? I mean, $10,000 budget? Where's that come from?
Winging it.
Oh yeah, just kind of assuming like between like moving costs and
I think
deposit or whatever.
I think to get that place is going to take about half our budget because it's going to be last month's rent, that month's rent, and the deposit, which is I think matches the rent.
Sure. I mean, the upside is that she's got it.
Plus pet deposits? I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. And, but I guess the positive side is she has a gig here in Seattle when she gets here.
Yep.
So rent is sort of, is that enough to cover rent? Is that enough? Yeah. Okay, good.
She'll be making over $2,000 a month.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. So then, it's tight. It's tight, but it's doable, right?
Well, yeah, plus my income, so it's not so bad.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and then you guys together can cover all the other things like food and other services. Man, yeah, move fast on that.
Yep.
I have come up in a period of time here in Washington when a place like that, back when I was 22, was probably $700-$800 a month.
Well, that is definitely an outlier. Like, other things like that are closer to over $2,000.
Yeah, 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 for sure, definitely. I've known some people who have had some great spots downtown, and I know how much they've paid for them, and it's mind-boggling. I was going to ask Wes if he'd want to share it next time he was on the show, because I know he's right down there, too, and he's paying a premium for that spot, but for him, it's all about that drive. It's none. He can get everywhere.
Oh, yeah, that's the best part. The location that we're looking at is 7 miles from where she works.
So no car or car?
Probably a car.
That does add more complexity. But you might be able to bus that. There's a lot of buses down there.
There is a bus stop in front of the place.
So you could in theory move and get to, she could get to work before the car arrived, and then you have a little more luxury to find the right deal.
Yep.
Man. Yeah, that's really got it. That's got
to
be.
It does double her trip time to work, but.
Sure. Oh, sure. Because it's not a direct route.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the math you got to do.
It's like 14 minutes versus 40.
We were trying to do that math, and we were trying to figure out how to get to New York. Doing the train versus the bus versus driving. And yeah, there's sometimes a lot of extra trip added to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, Seattle is a bitch to drive in. So you don't have to do that. You can, you know, use your internet device.
I mean, worst case scenario, she could bike it.
That's true.
Yeah. It's 7 miles.
That's also very popular down there and a great way to go.
Yeah.
And actually, it's a good time to be a biker in Seattle. They're like, they're getting...
'Cause it's winter?
No, that does suck. But no, they're getting more respect. They're getting more space. They're getting like lanes dedicated
bike
to
lanes,
them.
Yeah.
So bikers are getting more and more leeway in Seattle.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to move to Seattle is because it's non-driver friendly.
Yeah.
More it's so it's than very, like almost any
it's
other
very driver hostile.
City in the country.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'd rather drive in New York, but in New York accommodates cars differently than Seattle does. Like there's like parking and things like that, whereas Seattle will actively shut down very busy roads to dedicate them to bikers or buses.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a master plan, and I'm not here to criticize it. It's not my problem, so I get to just watch from afar.
I mean, it's great for me, who is not a driver at
totally.
All.
Or me, who maybe sometimes wants to go down there and then not have to worry about driving around.
Yeah.
That's nice, too. Portland's even better for that. But good. I hope you get this, because that is a deal, dude.
Yeah.
So if this doesn't go through, have you considered like going further outside of Seattle? Because the prices start dropping down.
You think they do, but not right now they don't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You got to go like all the way up here before they drop down? We're like 40 minutes north of Seattle, 45 minutes.
The problem is the balance I have to make is I have to find a place that's close enough to Seattle to have good internet connectivity.
Yeah. Yeah. And also not crazy commute time.
But then also far enough away from Seattle to be cheap. And that's a very narrow range with not a lot of availability.
Well, and then you do have the commute math. So I just said we're 45 minutes away from Seattle.
Yeah.
That's best case scenario. It could also, on an average weeknight, and this isn't even like unusual, it could be an hour 45.
I think the average
2 hours even.
Commute like right now is like an hour and a half.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. But if you're coming all the way from Seattle up here.
And this is like around noon.
Yeah, it can be a bear. Now, if you're going down like at say 3 a.m., it could be 45 minutes.
If you're leaving Seattle, it's not so bad. If you're
not
coming
usually,
into Seattle,
yeah.
It's almost always horrible.
Yeah, it can depend. It can
like,
be bad.
Like when Angela had to come down and bring me my my wallet.
That
was like a 3-hour journey for her.
Yeah, yeah. I summarize it as this: some of the most aggressive, hostile driving I do and have to watch for is when I get to Seattle.
Well, it's aggressive, hostile driving in a city that doesn't like drivers.
When we plan ahead of time for our arrival and departure for it in the RV because of Seattle. I can arrive in most other cities and not have to really think about that. Well, that's not true. But
except for San Francisco.
Yeah, and LA and Berkeley and Austin. So there is some consideration that has to be done, but Seattle's the worst.
Maybe it's just something about the people on the West Coast.
It's cities. It's cities, dude. About cities.
Was New York that bad?
Oh, for driving, sure, but not for walking. See, if you can, I think, live in the city, you got to embrace the walking or biking lifestyle.
See, I feel relatively safe walking in Seattle. I don't feel like I'd feel very safe walking in New York. Outside of certain areas.
That's exactly what I expected. 100%, I'm going to admit it right now. I expected to feel super unsafe in New York. Legitimately, not once ever felt
yeah,
unsafe.
Yeah, but what neighborhoods were you in?
Well, I was in Manhattan, so I was like, you know.
Yeah, okay,
like,
so that's like the police patrolled New York.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I still, though, it's so many people per cop per people ratio that the cops are almost don't even matter because there's just so many people. Somebody come up and stab you when you're walking through a crowd, nobody even knows
what's
going
on. Yeah, but it's the mental effect.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you do know that you have the ironclad.
That's like the high class section in New York.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But I did still expect to feel like uncomfortable or unsafe, and I'd say I felt more comfortable and more safe than I would in, I mean, anywhere. Like I couldn't believe how New York felt, because that was something both Hadia and I talked about. Is like, can you believe? Like, did you feel ever unsafe, anything like that? And I haven't really ever felt unsafe in Seattle, except for at night in certain parts. There's been moments where I felt a little unsafe. But it's all kind of the same. Seattle has less going on. So
Seattle feels just like this really large town stuffed into some woods. Yeah.
On the
oh,
coast.
Yeah.
It's like it's like stuffed into a forest. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that between the two, Seattle's more my speed, just because there's less people going.
It's more chill.
Yeah.
It's full of them hipsters you like.
Yeah. Well, you know, ever since we legalized weed, we were over caffeinated, to be honest with you. But then when we legalized weed, people sort of chilled the fuck down a little bit in Seattle, and so it's helped a little bit because otherwise they were really getting obnoxious.
Yeah. Apparently, according to somebody I know that lives in Seattle, the reason that it's more of a seller's market for rent is because they are actually tearing down a lot of the old places that used to be for rent and putting in the premium places that are like $2,000 or $3,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. Well, people don't think about it, but Seattle is really a tech center. You've got Nintendo, T-Mobile, Amazon, Microsoft, Boeing.
A bajillion game companies.
Yeah. And that has driven up the average salary in Seattle quite a bit, which is, I think, led to it too.
I mean, the actual minimum wage in Seattle come January is going to be $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I hope it works out for you.
Yeah.
We'll check in. Are you familiar with Rust? Not the programming language, but the game.
Yes.
By Facepunch Studios.
Yes, I do believe that I am the one that informed you that there is nice high-res dongs.
Yes, you are. You are. And
was I right?
Yes, you were. I'll tell you about that in a moment. Wimpy and Poppy have both sucked me into this. I'm playing on the Gaming on Linux server.
Interesting choice of words.
And it is really a trip. So you start naked and completely just, all you have is a rock and a torch, and then you have to go build a base, you have to craft, you have to get clothing. And it's a fascinating game because it allows me to experiment with a couple of different life philosophies. Like the first one is do it all my own solo. I build everything myself. I take my time. So right now what I'm doing is I found abandoned gas stations and bus stops, and I'm converting them into my bases, and I'm living there while I slowly collect things all on my own. And if this inevitably fails, then I'll try like a team thing. I'll try working with a team and seeing if I get further. And then when that fails, I'll try like a select thing and see how far that gets. And it is a fascinating way to play out post-apocalypse scenarios with zero cost. And the other element that's fascinating about it right now is because the game's in heavy development, they're wiping the server every 30 days, which means everything resets. Everything you've done, all your progress, everything you've learned, everything you've built, collected, wiped, gone. And so the last couple of days before the wipe, people start going batshit crazy. And so I logged in on the day of the wipe just to watch the chaos, mm-hmm. and it totally hooked me because people are just having a great time. So I spun in on Wimpy Island, which apparently was Wimpy Island. I didn't know about that. And because I'm there, everybody decides to come over. And for the last day before the wipe, they put in cars. And so people are like driving cars over, like a whole swarm of people comes over. And within a couple of hours, we've consumed all of the resources on this island. And the island has flipped to the control of Poppy, and it is now Poppy Island.
Oh.
And Poppy Institutes.
Wait, don't they live together?
No, they do in Rust, yes. and Poppy Institutes a tax system, he also hands out welfare food and things like that.
So is there like a vying for control even inside their own house?
They are, these two guys work together like ninjas. They have their own like little subtle language that they use that like they can use in public chat that nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. They'll run off and collaborate and then come back. And so last night, I was showing Dylan the game. My son Dylan, he's 8 years old, and he's a big Minecraft.
He's already familiar with penises.
Yeah, he has one of his own, and he's really got Minecraft down. And I like showing this stuff to Dylan because he's actually got a pretty keen eye and sense. It's like unrefined, but he's got a keen sense of games, and he can spot stuff that I can't spot. Like we're strafing, and he'll see mushrooms in a bush at the edge of our render distance. He'd be like, Dad, go over there and get those mushrooms. I'm like, Dylan, there's no mushrooms over there. No, I saw him. And I'm walking over there, and I still don't see him. I'm like, oh, come on, Dylan, you're wasting our time. Oh, here they are. All right, I'll just grab those real quick. I mean, the kids got it down. And I was showing them the different aspects of the game, and we had Discord open in the background. And I was listening to the voice chat, and I look at the game, and I don't want to out anybody, but I think Wimpy may have been logged in for, let's just say, several hours. Mm-hmm. And it was 7:30 p.m. Pacific time.
I don't want to out anybody, but I'm outing Wimpy.
It was 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. I'll let you do your own conversion to UTC, but it's late. And I hear...
Yeah, it's like 3-4 in the morning.
Yeah, and I hear, oh, right then. Well, there's people on my roof. And what happened is, because we're playing on the gaming on Linux server, a band of Windows users log into this Rust game, and they come across Wimpy and Popey's Sandwich Palace, which is a beautiful house. And of course, they've set up
sandwich
stuff.
Sandwich Palace. Do they serve sandwiches?
I don't know. I've never been inside. They set up like stuff on the ground so they can hear people approaching. And sure enough, they heard Wimpy. Wimpy's in this house by himself because Popey's gone long to bed. And when you log out of Rust, you go to sleep and your body stays vulnerable the entire time you're logged out. So Popey's sleeping on the second floor.
So do they like play Rust in shifts now?
They kind of were. Popey's on the second floor. Wimpy's on the first floor, and he hears people on the roof. And so you can hear him planning to defend Popey's body and try to defend their house. And he's calling for backup. And I'm running to see what's all going on. And I'm running as fast as I can, but I'm showing the game to Dylan. So we get distracted by crafting and collecting
and
items and mushrooms and hemp and all this. But I hear this all going down like a radio drum in the background where I Always Sin and Wimpy are on the gaming server trying to prevent Wimpy's and Popey's house from getting taken by a band of Windows users. And by the time I make it there, they'd successfully killed all of them, but they were coming back. These raiders were coming back to loot their dead bodies, and that's when we got a full dong in the face. We were hiding in the bushes because we didn't want them to kill us. So we're
somebody
hiding.
Ran into the bush?
They ran up to the bush because they saw us, but we were crouched, and so the dong was right at eye level, and Dylan's playing the game with me. And I'm like, oh yeah, by the way, Dylan, there's nudity in this game.
So exactly what you described.
Yeah.
Well, minus the dong. Well, maybe not minus the dong. But exactly what you described is precisely why I watch Twitch. You hear that and see that kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just super addictive to watch and listen to.
It was really fun to listen to him and then get there. And then, of course, Wimpy was late and he was on the defense. And so he hears me walking around because I'm checking out his pad, and he hears me down on the ground because they've set stuff out so they can listen to it. And I hear him in the voice chat going, "Right, I hear someone else down there now." And I'm like, "It's just me, Wimpy. It's just me. Don't kill me." And I think he got an arrow off before he read my text chat.
Well, that's why you got to be in voice, Chris.
I know. But we were watching a movie too. Anyways, it was just one of these games that I had a really great, unique experience, and it's gorgeous. Like when the sun rises and the sun sets, I want to launch my drone and start videoing that thing. It's so beautiful. It's
so,
really a pretty game.
If you like that type of game, you'll also probably like Ark because it's a similar game, except more places to hide because there's very much more jungly, and also has dinosaurs.
Yeah, I've heard that. I might check that out. I mean, right now I'm playing Rust because there's other people that I enjoy playing with.
Well, see, what you do is you get this other game, and then you convince everybody else to play this game with you. Maybe start a LUP server.
That would be cool.
And then there's also Age of Conan.
Oh, really? But do these play on
Conan Exiles?
Do these play on GNU/Linux?
I think Conan might. I'm pretty sure Ark doesn't, but it works under Wine.
Okay.
Or maybe it does. But either way, they're both good. And if you like the kind of getting geared up from nothing sort of thing, but you want an experience that lasts maybe more like 30 minutes, you could play PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which is more of a survival games kind of game where you have an ever-shrinking border and you just try to kill people. And usually doesn't last more than like half an hour. But you just try to gear up as much as you can.
That sounds fun.
You get to choose where you drop inside the circle.
I think this has been, I like the setting of Rust. I like everything's collapsed. There's like abandoned gas stations and supermarkets and quote unquote launch sites. And there's crafting and blueprints. That's a neat gameplay aspect to it. I think I could see myself coming back to it. And I really appreciate the fact that it's a good Linux game. I've been running it on Linux exclusively and it's pretty much been flawless. There was a recent update where there's a couple of weirdities, but they pushed out a patch within minutes actually.
Yeah, Ark and Conan both have those same kind of elements, but they're basically different settings. Ark is prehistoric, obviously, and Conan is kind of post-apocalyptic fantasy-ish. So you got like crazy huge spiders that try to kill you and mythological monsters and stuff.
Well, I fucking hate spiders.
Well, then you can kill them extra hard.
I'm gonna.